G'day, this is Big Brady Marshall.
This is Brian Alvarez.
This is Dean Brady of the Millennials.
This is the Jurassic Punk Sid Parker.
How many of you guys have heard the term kayfabe?
Blue Doggers. This is Jay Hunter from OSW Review.
This is Matt Grim Basso.
This is the loosest kid in Australian wrestling, Adam Brooks.
This is Scrap Brand Adam Pearce, and you are locked in
to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Welcome, everyone, to your longest-running Australian wrestling podcast, Wrestle Radio Australia. I'm your host, Todd Eastman. Feeling a lot better this week, as you could probably tell. I'm kicking the man flu's ass, as you can see, and I'm feeling great. And I'm feeling so good, in fact, that we have a double interview episode here this week. I hope you all went out the past weekend and enjoyed local pro wrestling. I know I was at Pro Wrestling League. It was a really, really good crowd, a really fun crowd, a really hot crowd, and they had a great night with some great matches, including Mick Moretti and Tim Cade, who really did well against each other. I was with Jake Nova in a six-man scramble match, I guess you would call it. Really, really good match. It was really good to see the young talent in there progressing and getting better, and I really think that Mitch and Jesse are onto something with Pro Wrestling League, and I hope they stick with it. Quickly want to talk about something. I know I brought it down a little bit last week with something I was not happy with. This week is sort of the same thing, but I'm not going to really go into it. If you want to know what I'm talking about, go on to the Wrestle Radio Australia Facebook page. I shared a post from a promoter in New South Wales about some tactics from another promoter in New South Wales, which really aren't cool. And if you want to know more about it, then just, like I said, head on to the Wrestle Radio Australia Facebook page and you'll see what I mean. But that sort of shit is not cool, and it should be stamped out of professional wrestling in this country. Hell, should be stamped out of professional wrestling everywhere. But someone who shouldn't be stamped out of professional wrestling everywhere, and that is my first guest for this week. He is the new Riot City Wrestling Champion, Rocky Monero, out of nowhere, came up and acclaimed the Riot City Wrestling Championship by cashing in his key, or unlocking his key to the city, got to get the wording right there, unlocking his key to the city title shot against Zach Sabbath and winning the Riot City Wrestling Championship last Friday night. To talk to him all about that, all about where he's sort of career trajectory is gone, because it went with, when I talked to him a couple of months ago, he's all about, oh, just want to help teach the young guys and really bring it up, because I've had my time here in wrestling, and I really just want to make the place better, to finding himself a rich vein of form as of late, to the point where he's shown that he still has what it takes to carry a company, and I've no doubt in my mind that Rocky Monero can easily carry a company in professional wrestling in 2019, and he's proving that with every match in Riot City Wrestling. We talked to him all about that, and all about that other good stuff. And then my guest after that is, I actually got a couple of guys come in to do the interview for me, because can't be everywhere, unfortunately. And luckily, Sean Fuster, the voice of Riot City Wrestling and the ring announcer for World Series Wrestling, who are on tour very soon, him and a good friend of ours, the Difference Tyler Daniels, sat down with the one and only Eric Bischoff. And they all talk about his time with WCW, his time with WWE, 83 Weeks, the podcast, which he is coming around on tour around Australia really soon. So you can get your tickets for that one at, I think it's Destroy All Lines. I'll definitely check it up. I'll have it ready for you at the end of this show. I'm so professional. They catch up with him and talk to him. A really good conversation. And I know it's something that we don't normally do. Normally we stick to talking to stuff that involves Australia and all that stuff. But it's sort of it's one of those things where I was offered the chance to talk to him, and I actually couldn't do it because I was flat out with other business. And luckily, Sean and Tyler were very, very lucky for me that they could step in and do the interview for me. So I do thank them for that. And hopefully you'll enjoy it right here on Wrestle Radio Australia. But first, of course, where the action is. That's right, it's now time for where the action is. And in Victoria on Saturday night, PCW have Mayhem at the Southeastern Entertainment Centre in Ferntree Gully. Tickets for that one are at pcw.com.au. And also in Victoria, in Colac, at the Colac RSL, the King of Colac, Steel Cage, Doors for that one are at 6 p.m. Tickets for that one are also at the door. Go and check that out if you're in Colac. Steel cage match. Can't go wrong with one of those ones. In New South Wales on Saturday night, Rock and Roll Wrestling have their Super 8 tournament to crown their Rock and Roll Wrestling champion. It is at City Diggers in Wollongong. There are limited tickets available. Go on to rockandrollwrestling.com or OutTix or OutTix.net and get your tickets for that one. If you're in Wollongong, go on and check them out this Saturday night in New South Wales. In Western Australia on Saturday night, we have Western Pro Wrestling at the Baldivis Rec Centre. Tickets for that one are at perthwrestlingtickets.bigcartel.com. There's nothing going on in Adelaide on this weekend, so just chill out and find some good Aussie streams and check them out. Check out some PWA online, also MCW online. Go and check out some Aussie stuff. Stay home and watch some good wrestling if you're in Adelaide this weekend. But if you're in Queensland this weekend, on Saturday night, go and check out IPW Love and War 3 at the William Duncan State School on the Gold Coast. Zeke Andino or Jesse Love will both put their respective titles on the line to determine the first ever undisputed champion. Tickets for that one are at ipwaustralia.com.au. Go and check them out. Really good promotion down there on the Gold Coast. Do great things for the young and up-and-coming wrestlers in Queensland. Hell, the young up-and-coming wrestlers in Australia, period. And remember, any promotions that want me to mention their shows on here where the action is, hit us up on Facebook or email me at WrestleRadioAustraliaTodd@gmail.com and we'll mention you on an upcoming episode or book me and I'll definitely mention it because, as I say every week, I am a massive shill for myself. And that is where the action is this weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the
I am here with the, as of this past Friday night, the new two-time Riot City Wrestling Champion, Rocky Monero. How are you, mate?
I'm good, my brother. How you doing?
I'm good. Like we talked a little while ago on the show and you were all, yeah, I'm just having fun. I'm quite happy just working with the young guys. And next thing you turn around and you're the champ.
Yeah, well, you know, strange things have happened, but, you know, still got a bit of stuff left in the basement, still got some juice left.
Yeah.
You know, still got a few stories left to tell, so.
When I saw it, I messaged you, like, a little bit of fight in the old dog.
Oh, yeah, mate. Still got the itch. And, yeah, so when, like I said, as we were talking last time, like, I had that sort of desire to come back and help out and all that sort of thing. And then, you know, I had a couple of good matches, and then I had a couple of bad matches. And that made me think, well, hang on, Dick, what am I doing here? So yeah. Then I sort of like, well, you know what, I'm going to double down on the storytelling. And then I gave myself some really tough sort of briefs, like really tough sort of scenarios to crack. But if I can get these over, then I know I'm back. Yeah. And I nailed all the above. And then, yeah.
But you're arguably in the best shape of your career, really. When just like aesthetically, anyway, looking at you, you're arguably in the best shape of your career. Surely that's what's helping you, like, maintain this level.
Yes and no. Like I said, I look physically better. My neck is terrible. my discs would disagree with your analysis, but yeah, and I found I don't have the engine that I used to. So I'm kind of getting by on the fact that I look like I know what I'm doing. And, yeah, so I've been using that a lot. I tried to do a few matches where I just try to step out of my comfort zone.
Yep.
And found that I gassed out real quick. And, yeah, I figured I can't do the dance step matches where it's just, you know, follow the moves and just, you know, plan the whole thing start to finish and just go through it. Mm-hmm. And just try to remember spots and just go through the choreography. I cannot do that. I can't do it. So I decided to abandon that and just go the complete opposite way. I'm like, right, well, I'm no good at that. There's no point trying to push shit uphill. I might as well go back to what I'm good at, and that is, pretending to punch people and selling my ass off.
Yeah, because I know I was there in January and you weren't happy at all with your match with Brooksy.
Oh, no, it was terrible. And like I said, not Brooksy's fault, but yeah, we had a really good match earlier the year before.
Yeah.
And I think expectations were quite high for it. And I did sort of let him sort of, I thought, well, you know, this kid's sort of, you know, he is outstanding at the moment. He's sort of the man at the moment. So I thought, you know what? I'm usually the old bloke that goes, no, I'll call it, kid. Just listen to me.
Shinlock.
But I thought, you know what? I'm going to try to, part of that, you know, I've still got the young man ego inside me that went, nah, I can hang with these young fellas and I'll let him call the whole thing. And I just, about 2 minutes out there, I looked at him and I just went, mate, I've forgotten all of it. And it was just me just trying to remember. So it didn't feel like I was actually performing. For me, wrestling is, I've got to feel what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I've got to, you know, I've got to believe in every move and every movement. And if I'm just trying to remember, yeah, some choreography, I can't. I feel like I'm just going through the motions and I feel like I lose the crowd because everyone usually gets invested in my matches because I'm trying to be believable in what I'm doing. But if I'm doing something that I don't even believe in personally, it reflects, and that's the reason why that match in January was just horrible. Mm-hmm. It was gift-worthy. There's lots of great gifs from it on Twitter, which I thought was hilarious because everyone's like, "Oh, that looked like it was a really good match." I'm like, "Well, the beautiful thing about gifs is you can see the action; it looks great, but you can't hear the fact the crowd's sitting on their hands."
Yeah, so. I remember because I was up in the bird's nest with Tyler, and he's just like, we could tell by the look on your face, we're like, he's not going to be happy with this.
Oh, no, I was hating every second of it, yeah.
Both of us at the same, looked at each other and went, that was good. And straight away he goes, he's not going to be happy. He's no, he's really not. He can tell.
I always gauge my matches by the reaction. Did I get the reaction I set out for? And, you know, how did I create that reaction?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just based off moves, then I've never been very good at creating reactions just off moves. You know, like I'm happy to sit through a silent match if I know there's the payoff at the end, which I had recently with Dean Brady. I told him before we went out there, I said, look, to be honest with you, because I was in the middle of the heel turn and he had just turned face the month before. So it was like, well, people aren't quite going to remember that you, last time they've seen you, you were a heel. You know, they won't remember that, like the very last time they saw you, you were a face.
Mm.
And I'm slowly turning heel, but because I've been doing this for 18 years now, people recognize me. They know who I am. So they're more likely to go, oh, I know that guy and cheer me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, look, if we're going to turn them, they're going to be uncomfortable with the turn. So it's going to be very, very quiet throughout most of the match. Like I knew I had to kind of eat shit and just accept the fact that it was going to be like really dead for 90% of it. But I had a spot finish for the plan for the finish. I'm like, if we nail that, then they'll come, and it's exactly what happened. So I was very happy with that.
Because yeah. your style is the sort of quote unquote throwback style, which I really enjoy. I enjoy it more than the spots style.
Yeah.
Is that something that's hard to get across to the younger guys?
Yes and no. I've found recently with the last few shows, they're starting to get it a bit more. Whereas it when it first started, because a lot of the young lads, especially the ones coming through RCW, have no idea who I am. You know, I was sort of on my little hiatus while they were all starting and that sort of thing, or becoming fans of the local product. And so they just had no idea. So all they had to go by was basically me telling them stories of things I'd done in the past, and that, you know, sometimes can come across as, yeah, right, old man, we get it, you were great.
Yeah. yeah.
And then I put in a couple of bad performances. And then it becomes, you know, that strengthens their resolve in not listening to me, which I get. I completely understand. You know, and like I put myself in their shoes, as much as it feels annoyed to be somewhat disrespected from my point of view, I get where they're coming from. You know, mm-hmm. and like you can only believe what you see personally.
Yeah.
So then to have those last few shows, like my match earlier this year with Cree and then the one with Brady and that sort of thing, and they saw how I'd always give them my match brief and my plan before the show, and go, right, what's how I execute it? And then I came back and they were like, shit, you know, you really nailed that one. And I'm like, that's like, I always try to explain, this is what I'm going to try to do, this is how I'm going to get there, and this is why it's going to work. And yeah. If you can get your whys down, then, you know, that's how. And so now I've noticed a few of the younger lads have started to see, okay, well, there is a method to the madness. He's not just an old guy talking shit.
Yeah.
So now they're starting to embrace a little bit more of it. So every now and then, you know, they will come up, you know, how could I have done that better? What can I tweak here? And I'm not going to just tell them, you know, oh, you're wrong, you're going to do it like this, because that's the beauty of wrestling at the moment, is the fact that I mean, you. I mean, just it's just a huge segue. I'm really bad at this. Sorry, but you look at the Double or Nothing show from the other day.
Mm-hmm.
That had everything that the Spot Monkey fans love, and then it had a really strong story match.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like that's the whole thing now. Is that I can't just go look wrestling. Storytelling is the only way to go because that's the way I was raised on it. No, there's a space for storytelling and there's also a space for Spot Monkeys. You know? Yeah. And not saying that in a negative way, but that's some people love to watch the athleticism and the fast moves and that sort of stuff. And people like those sort of dance matches. Now, I just got to the stage where I realized I can't do that. So there's no point playing to a weakness, play to my strength. So I'm happy to be the story guy. Because we've got the guys that can do, you know, the spots. We've got the guys that can, other guys that can do stories. We've got jerks like Cree that can do both and just do whatever they just pretty much do it all. We've got those sorts of people, and you see it all around the country now. I mean, there's so many good performers, and everyone's sort of, you know, everyone's not trying to just be the overall man. Everyone's like seemed to have found their sweet spot. And starting to play up to that, and I think it's probably one of the best as far as like quality wise of matches. It's the best era we've had in Australia.
Yeah, and you're right. Like about talking about the young guys from RCW, because when I went down in there in January, hardly any of them knew who I was when I walked in the gym, and I'd only been gone for a couple of years. I'd only been gone for 2 years, I think maybe.
Mate, they're young pups, mate. They don't care. Basically, yeah. You remember what you were like when you were 20? You know, like,
I don't anymore. Back and go,
when I was in my early 20s, I thought I was the best, and I cared about anything that I liked personally, and that was about it. You know?
Yeah.
And so you've got to sometimes sort of get out of your own head and into their head, and that's the way they're thinking. You know, and you've got to understand where they're coming from, and that's what sort of it took me a while to get used to, but now I'm starting to, and it's becoming, making it a bit easier to teach. Because I can kind of see it through their eyes, but yeah, we've had our blow ups, and we're always going to have our blow ups. But it's I've come a long way since the last time we spoke.
Now I'm going to ask you a question because I don't get to see the shows in full until I get to see them on YouTube because like there's no streaming, unfortunately. What's going on with Jimmy C and Steve Miller? Because that looked like an amazingly sort of facey entrance that they did, but they're heels?
No.
They're not.
Slowly making the transition. Like the idea originally was obviously Jimmy C was the shitty little sniveling, almost Jimmy Hart style heel manager and that sort of thing, and he's been that way for years. But then he started doing those promos, and the thing is, this is what I had to sort of get through to the guys. If you're entertaining enough and the people believe in you, sometimes they'll just cheer you regardless. You know, whether you're trying to portray a good guy or a bad guy, they will just get behind you because they enjoy being entertained. And when Jimmy started doing those, and he makes his own videos, those managed at first sight videos.
Yep.
The first couple of those, he absolutely knocked out the park. They were great. I'd recommend anyone go check out the library and the Riot City Wrestling Facebook page to find some of those videos. He's done a great job with them. And when he sort of hit on the one with Steve Miller, they clicked really well. They had like a really good chemistry, and sort of like Miller was trying to be the, you know, I'm too good for this, I'm a tough guy, I don't need your shtick, and you know, Jimmy was being his normal sniveling self. But it's almost that sort of odd couple chemistry that kind of worked.
Yep.
And the first time they did it, their match with Kurt Barron was really good. Like, it was really entertaining. And it was one of those times where they finally, like, Stephen Miller himself would admit it. He goes, look, I always sort of got the physical aspect of it, but I wasn't great at the storytelling. But now he's starting to understand what the character is and who his character can be.
Mm.
And then he sort of just went, all right, we'll just go with this. And now it's like it's so entertaining. Like, even after the last show, like, my girlfriend and friends and that sort of stuff, and friends that haven't been to shows for a while, they're just like, mate, that entrance was the greatest thing I've ever seen. They did the big Lion King entrance when Jimmy comes. And because that's a beautiful thing about Jimmy C., he has no shame. He's like, no, if this is going to be entertaining, if this is going to make a crowd cheer, I'll do it. And some of the outfits he comes out in, I mean, came out and crawled around in a lion suit and pretended to be Simba. It was brilliant. You know, and like, he'll do anything to get that reaction from the crowd. And think the crowd's now just going to respond with, instead of, oh, I hate this guy because he's a dick, they're like, I love this guy because he's just putting in. You know, and so the crowd is starting to sort of, they've become not a novelty act, but they become like a really, you know, endearing part of the show. People go to go, yes, I want to see this guy. This guy's cool, you know, and this guy's got this manager, and this guy's a bit of an ass kicker. All right, this works, you know, like so.
Yeah,
they're engrossed in what's going on. So they've captured the audience, and it's really good to watch. I'll be honest with you, I was pissing myself laughing when I watched the entrance, and I'm trying to prepare because we came out next, and I'm trying to get serious and get pumped up, but I couldn't stop. Like I had to stop and watch. It was just great stuff.
Well, now that you're the champ again, the first time you were the champ, we had Rocky City Wrestling. Is Rocky City Wrestling on its way back?
I think we have to mix it up. You know, like I think. Can't just, I mean, rehashing me as champion is bad enough. I don't think we need to rehash the same name or anything. So I think we'll change it up. We'll make something different. Yeah, there might be some things in the works. I like to have a little team around me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that the Rocky City Wrestling thing was good when we did it. And as I always like to point out, like it was myself, Jonah Rock, Elliot Sexton, and Matt Silver.
Yeah, what a bad trio. What a bad group you had around you.
Not a bad. I mean, like I said, I will claim that I taught them everything they know, and now I'm the reason for all their success in WWE.
I was going to say, but really, where are those names now? I don't hear those names anywhere anymore.
Yeah, no, they're just doing terribly. Yeah, I heard they're all nightclub bouncers these days.
Yeah.
Driving forklifts and it was great. I mean, it was a great time. And like you said, if you look back at that, you kind of go, well, there's no way I'm going to recapture that magic, you know, where I was the leader of that group of men. But we'll see what we can do. But yeah, I don't want to give away too much, but there might be some things in the works.
Yeah, nice to hear. About Riot City, because for the longest time, especially the whole time I was there, really, we always ran Saturday nights. Have you found the transition of Friday nights at HQ like harder for the crowd to come along to, or is it a much of the muchness, or is it the same sort of crowd that comes on the Saturday nights, or is it a different crowd?
It's a slightly different crowd. Like, we still have a few, I mean, a lot of the regulars, because obviously we got some diehards and that sort of thing. And we do, it's as much as it's still a family show, with the atmosphere and the location of the venue, it doesn't feel as much like a family event. So you can tell that the families much prefer the Saturday nights and that sort of thing. But this way, we can almost tap into a different market. Mm-hmm. You know, we still get our diehard family crew and all the big, big wrestling fans. But with the new, like the AGQ complex, it does tap into that Friday night of people sometimes just want to go out to a show after work, you know what I mean? Like, we can get those people that have, you know, finished work, go out for a drink, all right, cool, you know, it's on the main strip where all the clubs are, hang on, Tick, let's go hoof into there, because I think that's what was the beauty of the show we just had, is the fact that we had a lot more door sales than we normally would.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was a bit nerve-wracking. Yeah, the week before, because apparently the pre-sales weren't where they had been previously. But then we're very happy with the result with the crowd. Like, so obviously there was a lot more that sort of just like a lot more walk-ups, and that's great because that to me is new people.
Mm-hmm.
And the show that we did put on was exceptional. Like, every match got over, the crowd was just hot and keen for everything.
Yep.
And it kept a really good story. The setup we have with the, you know, just the LED screens, like the ring around above the ring, like the big circle, and it just advertising the next show already up there, and you know, so it's just constantly in your face, so you're not having to remind everybody, and oh, next guy's come to Long Live the King July 5th, it's been in their face all day.
Yeah,
so it's one of those things with the setup and the way everything looks, it's one of those things where anyone that was a walk-up on the night that may have never been to a show before is more likely to go, hey guys, come to the next one, because I was at HQ and it was sick, you know, it was a really good setup. So I think we're going to go a lot better going forward. I mean, it might be a slightly new crowd, but you know, there's still, I mean, as big as it is and as good as the wrestling is, there's still, you know, like thousands of people in Australia that don't know the wrestling exists, you know, and so we need to start to tap into these different markets and not just play to the same family crowds in the same family venues. So, you know, it works in a way. I mean, we may lose a few people, but we also still run a Latvian hall as well. So we've got, you know, best of both worlds.
Yeah. Do you ever see that? Like, because you see some of the crowds coming out and you think about, because for a while there, you helped run Wrestle Clash.
Yeah.
You ever thought about bringing something like that back for a strictly 18 market? Because I think something like that could actually really work in Adelaide if done right and done every couple of months sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's still something that I've always wanted to do. Like, I've fought very hard for the Wrestle Clash thing. But yeah, it was just hard at the time. I wasn't really in the right headspace for it either. But I do think there's definitely a market there. And I mean, you see now MCW is right much more regularly with the Wrestle Rock shows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just proves, and, you know, even PWA doing their black label stuff, there is a market for those over 18 shows where people can, you know, get a bit more edgy. And yeah. One of the things about the over 18 shows is it's the best for the young lads to test their character stuff, because those shows, you can do all the spots and you can run a technical genius wrestling match and the crowd won't care.
Exactly.
You know, and like they are there to have a laugh, get pissed, and, you know, like, just enjoy what they're watching. So if you do some big moves and sort of stuff, a couple of fancy things, yeah, great, you're going to love that. But then you need to approach them a little bit differently than you do a standard wrestling show. Like, I always treat the over 18 shows like I'm doing a street performance. You know, you've got to engage them, because if you don't try to actively engage them, they're more worried about when their next drink's coming than what's going on in the ring. So yeah. you've got to really amp up the personality. And I think it's a really good learning curve for the young lads to work in front of those sorts of shows, because it makes their performances on the other shows even better. So, yeah, I still think there's a market for it. Hopefully there's something that we can work towards in the future, but, yeah, there's definitely a market for it in Adelaide.
Yeah, because I know that's something up here with the promotion I work with, AWA, and our Grindhouse shows. That's where we're sort of heading towards, that more of the Wrestle Clash, Wrestle Rock sort of a style, because that's where we are in the valley at the zoo is just prime real estate for that sort of a thing.
Are you in the valley?
Yeah, mate.
I've spent one or two shameless nights in the valley. I know exactly the clientele you're going for there.
Mate, trying to be my age and leaving there at night when you realise that everyone else is going out to go clubbing and you're just like, well, I'm just happy to go home right now.
I'm about ready for bed age too myself these days. I don't worry about that.
I legit messaged, like, I was talking to one of the other boys who's a little bit younger than me, but still like older age. And we messaged someone about availability, and it was a Friday. And he goes, oh, he hasn't got back to us yet. He said, so he's probably going out, mate.
Mm.
And so, you don't realize you and I right now are sitting under blankets ready to watch the footy, and we're quite happy. This dude is probably pre-drinking, so don't worry about
for
it.
For sure.
Leave from him.
And I know my reputation has preceded me a few times, and I've left a few of the boys disappointed with the fact that I'm not quite the man and the myth and the legend that I used to be.
bit of phantom action?
Yeah, I don't mind just sort of sneaking out the back door these days. I'll live to fight another day. I can still turn it on when I need to. Much like in the ring, I can turn it on when I need to, but yeah, as far as a regular occurrence, it doesn't quite happen like that anymore.
Are you looking to, now that you've sort of got this renewed sort of vigor, you're looking to travel now, or is it just still you want to stay in Adelaide and work on that sort of deal?
No, I mean, I'm much more open to it now. But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's hard, because I wouldn't mind doing some more shows interstate and that sort of thing, you know, purely that's the problem with wrestling, is you make so many friends around the country and you never get to see each other unless it's a wrestling show.
Yeah.
So I'm all happy to do it. It's just one of those things where my name isn't quite what it used to be. And so whether promoters are willing to pay to,
yeah,
to sort of reach my demands is going to be a completely different thing, because I'm sort of past the age of, you know, like, you know, I always encourage young lads to sort of, you know, if you need to fly yourself somewhere to get yourself some exposure, do it. But I'm not at the age or the sort of the level where I need to sort of fly myself to get exposure. And if I'm only doing shows locally because of that, then that's fine. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
But, you know, if anyone's happy to bring me in, then I'm more than happy to do a show. But it just has to be, you know, like, I ain't coming out of pocket for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fair enough. Well, mate, it has been amazing to catch up with you again. We have to do this more often. For people that haven't followed you yet or don't know how to follow you on the socials, get out there how they can catch up with all things Rocky Monero.
Well, yeah, follow Rocky Monero on Twitter, and it's got some more wrestling stuff recently, but there's also some really cold takes about the NBA and AFL. I do post about that a fair bit.
Yes.
I would say usually recommend the Rocky Monero Instagram, but for some reason Instagram has locked me out of that account and I can't use it anymore, so it's just some old photos. So, yeah, follow Riot City Wrestling. on Instagram and on Facebook, and that's where you'll get most of the updates of anything coming forward with those sorts of shows.
Yeah, and then when The Ringer eventually hires us to do rewatchables, we'll be fine there.
Oh, I definitely need to be on The Ringer. That is now my 100% goal in life, dream job, is to get to meet Bill Simmons and get a job on The Ringer. I don't care what it is.
As soon as I saw your tweet about that, I'm like, yeah, I'll help. That's
oh, mate, I've now become the biggest fan of the, like, as much as, you know, for me being, like yourself, diehard Lakers fan, to listen to all his, like, love of the Celtics just makes me cringe, but I still would love listening to the show every week.
His episodes now every week with Russillo are my favourites, because I love Ryan Russillo.
Oh, yeah, they've been outstanding. Their live draft party one was one of the funniest things of all time. It's one of those things where, you know, for us who are huge sports nerds and that sort of thing and love podcasting and sports radio and all those sorts of things, some of the jokes on that were just outstanding. But, you know, I'm laughing in my headphones and, you know, people at work are like, oh, what's so funny? I'm like, it would just take me too long to explain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I followed Russillo back when he was with SVP.
Oh, right.
And so, like, when he moved out of ESPN and got signed by Bill, I'm like, oh, yes, perfect.
Oh, yeah. They're just a perfect combination. And it's just good with the sort of the mobility. You know, you've got all the ESPN guys, which has now brought more ESPN guys out. Like, for me, I don't know if you're a High Noon guy, get on Pablo Torre and Bomani Jones. Their show is outstanding. All the Fox Sports guys, and then now all the people on The Ringer. It's just like, there's never been a better time to be a fan of sports.
Yeah. Well, I got it. There's a mate of mine at work who follows NFL as well, and he says his favorite thing to do is to watch me when I listen to Colin Cowherd.
Yeah.
Because of how irrationally angry I get on off some of his takes. He's like, you just get angry for no reason. I'm like, oh, there's a reason.
I'll become like his manager, like, because all my friends know that I listen to Cowherd, and then now they message me and go, oh, your mate said this, and I just, like, whether I agree with the take or not, I almost now, like, defend him just to start a fight. I just can't help but work the heel gimmick side, so, yeah. If I can make people that angry, I'm just like, yep, nah, I mean, I'll just back him.
Rocky Monaro, thank you so much for joining me, mate.
Thanks for having me, brother. Speak to you soon.
People say having an opinion is like having a penis. It's really great for you, but you shouldn't share it around. That's exactly what we don't do. We share it all about the internet. And in fact, we advertise it on other people's podcasts so that they can go and enjoy it as well. Am I talking about penises or am I talking about opinions on film? To find out, you'll have to go to our website, secondtakepodcast.com, or find Second Take Podcast on your podcatcher of choice.
Eric, look, again, as Sean said, thank you so much for joining us. We understand you weren't particularly well the other day, so we hope you're feeling better, and thank you again. Look, we're obviously very... Sorry, go on, mate.
I feel 1,000% better.
I'm glad to hear.
I'm glad we're able to do this now. I was not on my game.
No, we much appreciate it. Eric, we're really excited for you coming down for the No Brag Just Facts Tour of Australia this June. You've travelled here a few times before, obviously. So, a couple of questions. How do you like our fair country, and how excited are you for these shows this time around?
First question, I love the country. I've been to Australia. I think I've been here three times, twice with WWE, and once I promoted a tour with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair independently.
Yep.
Love the country, really love the people. I've found as I travel around the world that every city, and in particular every country, has its own unique personality. And I find Australia and the people of Australia to be very similar to where I live here in Wyoming. It's a very similar geography in some respects, but I love the people, I love the country, and I look forward to coming in and sampling some great food and a pint of beer or two.
Absolutely.
Well, you perform regularly at these live events, often with your cohort Conrad Thompson, where there are some more granular details and stories that can't be shared on the podcast. So how much fun do you have with these live events, sharing those sorts of stories and having that sort of one-to-one interaction with the fans?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, what's a live show like? What can I expect? And there's really, it's really two parts, really. And because the nature of professional wrestling is filled with colorful, over-the-top, crazy, oftentimes out-of-control, ridiculous characters, both in the ring and out of the ring, that inherently a lot of the stories that we can share are funny as hell. They just are. And it's not like I'm a stand-up comedian or anything like that, but just inherently, like I said, a lot of the stories that we don't tell on the podcast for a variety of reasons are inherently funny. The other part of our show that is really interesting is that because we utilize a question-answer format, and it's really up to the audience, but generally a lot of the questions that I get allow me to get into a much more detailed explanation of the business of the wrestling business, or in some cases, why we did what we did. Everybody's familiar with what we did, but not everybody understands why we did it. And I think when fans walk away from our show, at least my goal is that, number one, they laugh their asses off, and number two, they walk away knowing a lot more about the wrestling business than they did when they came to the building that night.
Well, speaking of that sort of insider knowledge, when you search Eric Bischoff on Google, it comes up with the description of entrepreneur first, then television producer, and then professional wrestling booker, which I know is a term that you dislike, and lastly, podcast host and on-screen personality. Is that the order you see and describe yourself as?
I think being an entrepreneur has probably led me to be everything else. I never planned or aspired or imagined that I would be an on-camera television personality or a producer. It was never a goal of mine growing up as a young kid or even a young man. It all just kind of happened. In many cases, out of pure circumstance and good fortune, but it all started with me being an entrepreneur. So I guess it's probably a good order.
Perfect. Hey, Eric, just on that, going back to being a young man, etc., if I take you back a little bit to the start. So the early days, you moved from Detroit, sort of in your early mid-teens, into Pittsburgh, and then on to the city of Minneapolis. For those who don't know, this is when you became a black belt in karate as a prize fighter, and then also a model. How do you think these may have helped you later in your life? And if these took off, would we have ever seen Eric Bischoff move into the wrestling world?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't think, you know, the little bit of time I spent as a model really affected me on a professional level. It did allow me to meet my wife, which definitely affected me on a big personal level.
Sure.
For the last 35 or 36 years. I think we're closing in on 37 years now, actually.
Wow, congrats.
So on a personal level, sure, that part of my life, you know, definitely had an impact on me. But professionally, I don't think so. I think the martial arts thing, I guess it probably gave me a lot more self-confidence.
Yeah.
Just overall, in general, which, you know, whether you're a martial artist or a boxer or a professional tennis player, you know, when you develop a skill set to a certain level, you automatically become a more confident person in other aspects of your life. So I guess I could probably attribute a little bit of that to martial arts. But the rest of it is, like I say, you know, a God-given gift of coincidence, I guess.
Given that Minneapolis was a solid AWA wrestling town, was wrestling something that you were following growing up? And do you remember the first moment that wrestling crossed your radar?
Yeah, that actually occurred when I was really young in Detroit, probably 7 or 8 years old. My mother and father only had one car. My dad worked on Saturdays, and Saturday was the day that my mom did her grocery shopping for the family. So typically my mom and dad would leave on a Saturday morning around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning and not come home until 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So my little brother and I had full command and control of the only television set in the house. that Saturday morning usually started out with, you know, cartoons that were typical from that period of time. And then around 11 o'clock in the morning, right before noon, a professional wrestling program called Big Time Wrestling came on the air in Detroit. And my brother and I would watch that, and then we would reenact some of the matches after the show. And fortunately for me, I was 4 years older than my brother, so, you know, being the bigger of the two, of course I always put myself over.
Of course you did. Eric, at that point, who were some of the major names at that point that you saw early on that you remember?
Oh, Bobo Brazil was a big name growing up in Detroit. Dick the Bruiser,
yep.
The Crusher, the Sheik, the original Sheik.
Yep.
Those were some of the names. You know, Ivan Putski, the Polish Hammer. When I moved to, you know, Minneapolis a little bit later on, you know, Nick Bockwinkel, Pat Patterson,
of course.
Ray Stevens, Wahoo McDaniel. Those were all, you know, Larry the Axe Henig. Those were all names that I kind of grew up with in my early teens and into adulthood.
Well, it's a star-studded legendary lineup, that's for sure. So when you were in Minneapolis, and obviously most people know you from your start out with the AWA, but the reality is your original involvement with the AWA wasn't actually necessarily in the wrestling space. You were first contacted the AWA and Vern Gagne trying to promote and market a toy line and trying to broker a deal to access their advertising. Is that right?
That's correct. I was more on what they call it television syndication, which is just a trade-specific term referring to sales. I worked with sponsorships. I tried to get television stations, independent television stations, to carry the show. I eventually moved from that into production just because I was fascinated by it.
Sure.
I wanted to learn it, so I would hang around the edit suite. When I was done doing all of my work and had my responsibilities taken care of, I would watch a young man by the name of Joe Chupik, who was our editor. I would watch him edit. And then eventually I'd ask him to explain to me what he was doing and how he was doing it, why he was doing it. And over a period of time, he actually let me do some editing of the show so I could learn that. So I got, you know, I ran camera long before I became on camera talent. I, you know, ran the television camera, which gave me the opportunity to watch Vern Gagne direct interviews.
Sure.
And I think Vern was probably one of the best. If you go back and you look at the AWA territory and some of the great names that came through there, including Hulk Hogan, by the way, Hulk Hogan gives much of the credit to his persona as Hulk Hogan, not to Vince McMahon, but to Vern Gagne.
Yeah.
That's where it all started. Despite what the WWE likes to tell you, Hulkamania was a thing long before the WWF was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to interview Hulk a few years ago, and he very much said that, you know, it comes from Gagne, it comes from those early days.
And if you've got Hulk Hogan, you've got Jesse the Body Ventura came through there, Kurt Hennig came through there, Ravishing Rick Rude came through there, so many, the Steiners came through there, the Midnight Rockers, Shawn Michaels came through there, all of them developed, you know, their characters and became big, probably as big as they've ever been prior to going to the WWF in the AWA. So Vern had a very, he had a great way of directing talents. He was hard to get along with in some respects because he was kind of set in his ways and a little stubborn, but he was really good at creating that talent. And if you look back at some of the biggest names in the history of WWF, many of them, Sergeant Slaughter, for example, had direct ties and got their start working for Vern Gagne in the AWA. So that gave me an opportunity to learn a lot, kind of like a fly on the wall. You end up absorbing a lot of great information and insights simply by being in close proximity. And that kind of summed up my wrestling career, really.
Well, I'm going to ask you about another moment in your wrestling career. Obviously, you transitioned from watching everybody behind the camera to being an on-air talent. Eventually, you would transition across to WCW, and we know of the great successes you had there. But along the way, you made a little pit stop. You journeyed up north for a tryout with the WWF in the 1990s. Can you tell us about how that went?
Well, it went horribly, and I didn't get the job. I needed that job really, really bad, and I didn't get it. Yeah, and it was really awkward because I showed, you know, and of course I was very excited. I was very young, number one. I was very broke, number two. I had two very young children, number three. And I had bankers and all kinds of people, you know, pounding on my door looking for the money I owed them. So I really, really needed that job. And I was excited about it. And I got to the WWE production facility in Connecticut. And after the, you know, initial pleasantries and everybody being nice to each other, I went into the studio and Vince McMahon said, grab that broom. So I grabbed a broom that was standing close by, and he said, sell me that broom. And I'm thinking, I don't know how to sell a freaking broom. But I did my best. I improvised as best I could. And looking back on it now, because occasionally people find these things like on the WWE Network, because you can find everything
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
if you look hard enough, you can find it. And people will send these things to me in social media, and I just laugh my rear end off every time I see that.
It's probably the most fateful job interview that you failed at, Eric, let's be honest, because you went on to have some ridiculous success in a lot of other ways, obviously WCW. And, you know, you're a big fan of the term that, you know, context is king. So I don't want to take any of this out of context. But you've got a long list of successes in your wrestling business and history. So I just want to run through these quickly. You know, you turned the first profit in WCW history. Obviously, introducing the NWO and that move to the reality-based storylines. 83 weeks of the Monday Night Wars, we obviously know. And that really forced WWE to change their focus of their product to model a lot after you. Obviously, homegrown talent such as Goldberg, for example, huge successes. Of course, the other's also true. And as they say, every idea can't be $1 million, and there has to be some that are a little bit stinkers. Eric, we had the finger poke of doom. We had the Yeti, the Demon, and even the triple cage of doom. When we have a look back at that, some of the not so much in-ring WCW stuff, what do you think is your biggest failure and your biggest success out of those sorts of things?
Well, you've done a good job of isolating some of the dumbest things I've ever done. I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome, Eric. I tried to make sure I balanced that with some of the best also, so I hope you appreciate that.
Which
too.
Means you're fortunate because in life he never balances my successes and failures. He just points out my failures.
No, I'm joking. I've said this to people all the time over the years. I think, you know, looking back on all of the successes I had and all the failures I had or mistakes I made, I don't look at them as failures, number one. I do look at them as mistakes
sure. Or
poor choices. But you learn so much from it. To be honest about it, I learn more from my mistakes than I generally do from my success. And part of that is because I think so much of success is timing.
Yeah.
There are great ideas that come along the way, but the timing isn't right. Or there's a really bad idea or a marginal idea, but the timing is perfect. So it's, you know, oftentimes when I look at, wow, this was really successful, what did I learn from that? I'm sure there are some things, but when something is a mistake and it doesn't go the way you want to go, it forces me at least to kind of break it down into little pieces to try to figure out what went wrong. And sometimes that process of breaking down a mistake or a bad choice is far more educational and worth more money to somebody else than your success.
Indeed.
So, you know, I don't look at some of those bad choices as horribly as, well, no, they were pretty horrible.
You mentioned they were some of the worst. Have I missed any in your opinion?
See, here again, you know, you mentioned the Demon character.
Yeah.
And what you don't know is why we created that Demon character. We created that Demon character because I had reached an agreement with Gene Simmons of Kiss, whereby Kiss was going to be a regular feature on our Nitro show.
Okay.
And we were going to do a joint venture for Kiss WCW merchandise because Gene Simmons and Kiss, especially back in the 90s, was probably one of the most successful licensing companies and license
Indeed.
In the world. So creating a character that people would associate with Gene Simmons was not, that's why we did it.
Yeah.
Now, it was a poorly executed idea that never came to fruition. So on its surface, it just looks like a really silly idea. But that's, again, the type of thing that we can talk about in a live show. that whether people liked it or didn't like it is almost irrelevant, but at least you understand why we did it in a much greater detail.
Indeed.
But in terms of any other huge mistakes that I made creatively, you know, things that I always, you know, kind of cringe when people bring it up, those that you mentioned are always at the top of the list. I think that Glacier character, the Glacier character that I came up with, which was kind of a derivative of the Mortal Kombat franchise that was very popular at the time. Probably not some of my best work.
Well, I want to talk, I'm going to be positive now and turn around to some of your more interesting work. And again, kisses are involved because, of course, you made your way to the WWE, and it's fair to say you've had an interesting relationship with each of the McMahon family. You've done everything from challenge Vince to a fight while in WCW to actually having a match with him in WWE to kissing both Stephanie and Linda. So which of these was the greatest accomplishment McMahon-wise?
I think making out with his wife was probably the coolest thing that I did while I was there, other than working with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's it shows
And I may be the only person, at least I hope I'm the only person, that can actually say I made out with his wife and his daughter.
Well, we won't get into those rumors. We'll save that for Dark Side of the Ring, shall we?
There we go. Good idea.
Perfect. Look, you know, we mentioned that in a bit of jest, Eric, but you've certainly, you've had a long and varied career, obviously, AWA, WCW, WWE, even to TNA, et cetera. You know, a number of different roles on screen, behind the scenes, all those. What was your favorite place and why?
You know, it's WCW, and WWE, but for different reasons.
Sure.
You know, in WCW, I got to be a part of something very special during a very special period of time. Again, going back to timing.
Yeah.
You know, Ted Turner was an entrepreneur. He was a visionary. He lived to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoyed the risk-taking process. He encouraged the people underneath him to be risk-takers. Of course, he wanted you to succeed more than you failed. But at the end of the day, he believed if you don't take big chances, there's no way you're going to have any success. He lived his life that way. That's how he created the world's first 24-hour news network.
Yeah,
it's why he became a world champion, world-class sailor. It's why he, you know, reinvented television as we know it, you know, throughout the 80s and the 90s. And I loved working there at that time. And to be able to create something new and to build WCW into something that nobody ever thought it could be other than Ted Turner.
Yeah.
That was a very satisfying thing. Now, it came with, you know, scar tissue. There were a lot of things towards the end when Ted Turner no longer was calling the shots and it was AOL Time Warner.
Mm.
Things got very ugly there, and it was a very miserable period of my life, honestly. You know, working in WWE gave me an opportunity to not have to worry about anything other than being a great character.
Yeah.
And I always loved performing. I loved being out in front of people. I had a knack for it. And I knew that I could be very successful at that. And that would have been a great way for me to end my professional wrestling career. Mm. And that's why I did it.
Yeah,
I did it really because as I left WCW, I left on a very down, a very bad note. It was not a pleasant experience. And I didn't want that to be the last chapter of my wrestling career. Working for WWE allowed me to work with a bunch of people I had never worked with before, including Linda and Stephanie McMahon, but also guys like, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, The Undertaker, Vince McMahon himself, and a whole host of other people that really kind of gave me a second lease on my on-camera career.
Yeah.
And it was fun. So I enjoyed WCW during a certain period, and I really enjoyed WWE during that time just as much, but for different reasons.
Absolutely.
Looking forward, Eric, you've also had a successful career of creating and producing TV shows, and you've now got a movie biopic in production about Hulk Hogan with Chris Hemsworth attached. It's a fascinating idea. Is there anything you can share with the Australian audience to do with that, the idea of our Australian guy playing the ultimate real American?
You know, I'm really, legally, I've signed a non-disclosure agreement that allows me to talk about absolutely nothing other than what you've already read in the paper, which
damn.
Is, yes, we're doing a movie, and we're all very excited about it, and for me to be able to work with people, you know, of that caliber, whether it be Chris Hemsworth, obviously, but, you know, the director, Todd Phillips, is an amazing director. He's just, he's wrapping up post-production on the new Joker prequel as we speak.
Yeah.
Amazing director. The writer, Scott Silver, is a great writer. He's done some amazing movies. Michael Shurer, who's another, you know, who's producing with me. I think he won an Academy Award, or an Oscar, whatever it was he won, 2 years ago for a movie called Limelight. So it's a very high, you know, pedigree group of people. I get an opportunity just to, much like I did when I worked for Vernon Gagne, you know, just try to learn as much through osmosis and proximity as I possibly can. It's a great opportunity.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Look, Eric, just before we let you go, because we are sort of short on time here for your sake, if there's one story or topic you speak about in the live shows that people should look out for, without giving away the whole story, obviously, what is it?
Dennis Rodman and Carmen Electra.
Okay, amazing. I wasn't expecting that, but I'm very pleased to hear it.
Oh, wait till you hear the story. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Well, we'll turn the recording off. And
Eric,
I know you won't.
Eric, we're going to wrap up the recorded part there. Thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us. And best of luck for the No Brag Just Facts tour.
Great, guys. I look forward to seeing you. I hope you come down to the show and maybe grab a beer when it's over.
That'd be great.
Sounds good. I'm in.
Once again, big thanks to all of my guests, I guess, this week. Rocky Monero, Eric Bischoff, Sean Fuster, and Tyler Daniels for stepping in and doing that interview for me. Very, very grateful you could do it for me, lads. And I look forward to maybe having you more, doing some more interviews on this show and on this channel, because really do like those boys. Really, really great lads. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to WIRA. It's free. You can do it on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. If you do stop by iTunes, give us a rating and review while you're there. Gets us out there and give us a 5-star. Helps us get inside more ears. Share the show and spread the word. Also, we're on Spotify now, so get onto that one and follow us so you'll catch every episode of Wrestle Radio Australia as soon as it hits. Also, make sure you like us on Facebook. Just search out Wrestle Radio Australia, and on Twitter at Wrestle Radio AU, or me personally at Beast Eastman. We do have our Wrestle Radio Australia t-shirts and whatever you want to get on Redbubble. It is redbubble.com. Just search out Wrestle Radio Australia or WRA when you hit the search engine in the Redbubble, on the Redbubble site. Any profits going for any of the sales of any merch we have through Wrestle Radio Australia, go to Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life, because they support things like mental health, and especially for Gotcha for Life, they go out and do great work with the youth, young men and women, or young men mainly, just supporting them and letting them know that it's okay to not be okay and to be able to talk about your feelings, because we lose. And just only today I heard on the radio, it seems like it's going to be even more than what they say, that we lose 6 guys a day, 6 young men, or even just 6 men in general a day in Australia to suicide. And that's not cool. And they say it could be a hell of a lot more that even attempt it during the day. It's just that when it's written up on reports, it's not written up as a suicide attempt because of the way they've done it or something that's happened. So it could be a hell of a lot more than 6 men a day, and that needs to stop. And that's what guys like Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life especially go through schools and talk to young men, and to tell them that it's okay to talk about it. It's good to talk about your feelings, and it's good to get it out there and not to bottle things up, because that's when things get bad, and that's when the old black dog, as they say, really gets a hold of you. And that's what we really are trying to fight, especially here at Wrestle Radio Australia, because there's so many guys that I talked to that after I shared my story about my feelings and all of that sort of stuff have come up to me and said, yes, I feel the same way, and thank you for doing that, and thank you for coming out and talking about it, and thanking me for making it seem like it is something that isn't abnormal to have problems. And it's not abnormal to have problems, not abnormal to get down on yourself. And the important thing is to not let it take over and to call a mate and to talk about it. And if you can't call a mate and talk about it, call a helpline and talk about it. Because that's when you don't talk about it and when you just let it fester inside you, that's when it gets worse. Anyway, enough of that. We're going to go out of Wrestle Radio Australia this episode with Promoland. And of course, Promoland is where we pick an Australian promo, or just now a promo in general, that I've really liked during the week, and to highlight it and to bring it to your attention. Because oftentimes, if you're not following a certain promotion's Facebook or something like that, you won't hear it. So this is what we're attempting to bring along, and attempting to, again, shine more of a light on Australian pro wrestling. And for me, being that I'm a manager, when I do step between those ropes, or when I do step out of that curtain on a wrestling show, promos are what I'm all about, and promos are something I love. And to be honest with you, promos are something that drew me into the world of professional wrestling and made me love it. And so for this week's promo, it is Jesse Youngblood, Jesse Love, one of my boys from Next Level. He is this weekend taking on Zeke Andino and IPW to crown the undisputed champion. So we'll see what happens there. But to take us out, here is Youngblood, Jesse Love, talking about this weekend's match against Zeke Andino, and that'll do us for this episode of Wrestle Raid Australia. I'm Todd Eastman, and we'll catch you next week, peoples.
Don't mind me, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes I like to drive my Flash Chrysler just to cruise around and think about my life and think about my wrestling career. You know what? What a life and what a wrestling career I've had. I've made this championship the must-have championship of Queensland, the must-have championship of IPW. An upcoming match with Zeke Andino. It's the biggest match IPW has ever seen. The biggest match Queensland has ever seen. It's champion versus champion, winner take all. And Zeke, I know you've got your little fairy tale ending. Oh, I'm going to walk in, I'm going to hold one championship in this hand, the other in this hand. It's just not going to happen, Zeke. That's the ending that's not going to happen. The ending that everyone's going to have to accept is Youngblood Jesse Love kicking your ass, taking the IPW Heavyweight Championship and retaining the must-have championship. I'm going to walk out with a sweet honey on my arm and as the double champion of Queensland.